everyone. This is Karen Herring from the Stutter Talk B team. I'm here with Rasheen McManus.
Hey, everyone.
Joel Cordy.
Hello.
And two very special guests, Bob Quiesel.
Hello, guys.
And a Stutter Talk newbie, Alina Davis.
Hi, everyone.
And we are recording the show right now from the National Stuttering Association's annual conference in Fort Worth, Texas. So we want to give a special thank you to them for allowing us to record here.
Last show.
Yeah, this is sad. Our last show. This is the last day.
Conference is coming to a close. So we're getting really nostalgic already.
Also want to thank Peter for agreeing to edit all these shows and doing it so fast and posting them. That's been awesome.
Thank you, Peter.
We also have another shout out to Peter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we just wanted to thank Peter for writing that great article on voluntary stuttering, the how and the why of voluntary stuttering. The Stutter Talk B team did a workshop this morning on it, and it was a lot of fun, and I think we did a good job. I also wanted to thank Bob for coming to the workshop, because every time
our expert in the corner.
I appreciate it.
Please don't say expert.
That's like whenever Bob's on the show, that word gets said about every second sentence. But
isn't your official name Bobby Expert?
Bob the Expert.
Weasel.
Well, it was funny because at the end of the workshop, a guy in front of me turned around and said, "You're Bob the Expert, aren't you?" I said, "You must be a stutter talk listener." So.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
But anyway, sorry, you can get back to your
point. No, I just wanted to say that every time like you raised your hand and you had a comment, I was always very eager to hear what you had to say, because you always had, it was always something thoughtful and appropriate, and every time you said something in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm really glad he said that, because I'm thinking that, and I'm glad somebody said that.
He was adding clarity, I think, a lot of the time.
It's sort of like the Bob is like, I'm trying to think of an analogy where, this is bad. This is the only thing I can come up with. Let's say you're seeing a river dam, and it's doing a pretty good job of holding in all the water, but if something were to spill over the dam, then Bob is the guy that says, hey, let's put that back in its right spot.
So during the workshop,
let's reinforce that dam.
Or the dam?
Yeah.
Whenever questions about a little
bit. A good job, yeah. But it's nice to have someone around that knows what they're talking about.
So speaking of Bob and Alina, we have them here on the show to talk about their young adulthood or just any sort of experience growing up with stuttering. I'm sure that they both have very different stories and interesting stories. So Karen's going to kick it off.
Yeah, I just realized that I introduced the show and didn't give any contact information.
I didn't even notice that.
So maybe I'll do that really fast. If you want to contact Stutter Talk, you can email stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 206-666-5340. Or if you want to contact the Stutter Talk B team directly, you can email bteam@stuttertalk.com.
Awesome.
All right, got that out of the way. So during the very first night of the NSA, first night.
Yes.
They had an opening ceremony where the Our Time Theater Company had a little presentation where little speeches were given and they sang a song. Those who don't know, Our Time is a nonprofit organization for young people who stutter, who are interested in the performing arts, and I probably really butchered that.
and they kind of do some other stuff.
And they do some other stuff. They're like really, really great.
It's like really, really cool.
I'm a really big fan, but from what I just said, I have no words actually. But Alina gave a speech that really, really touched me, and I've known Alina for a few years now, and I was just totally blown away and amazed by the things that she had said. And I've always sort of felt like you've, something about you just draws everyone to you. You just have this glowing personality, and learning about what you've gone through to get to this point, I just had no idea. And I'd love to know more about your journey to young adulthood and how you've gotten to this amazing place that you're at right now.
Sure. I grew up stuttering, like everyone else for the most part. I first realized it as a problem probably in a fourth grade when I changed schools, and no one knew what stuttering was. I tried like to hide it, and like I did those little tricks that we all do to hide it. Middle school was rough. High school was worse. In 10th grade, I was bullied for my stuttering. At that point, I stuttered a lot on my name, so they called me Alina, and like I was mocked in the hallways. I was like at lunch, I would be like cornered, and like. And they would say how, like, I said something bad about them. Some, like, I don't know. It was made up. And I couldn't defend myself because I stutter. Then, like, I found things about me written on a bathroom wall, and which is really lame, but whatever. Then one day after school, I logged onto Facebook like every other teenager did, and on the people you may know ad thing on the side, it said Alina Davis, and I was like, that's weird, I only have one Facebook. So I clicked on it, and it was all these horrible things about me written, and like totally cruel, and like I just sat there and stared at it and just cried for a long time. My parents weren't home. It was only me in the house. So I just like cried, and then after that, I decided not to tell anyone. I didn't tell my mom, which is shocking because she and I are very, very close, or like my best friend or anything. I didn't tell anybody. Then after school ended, my mom and I went on a trip, just she and I together, and we stopped at the bank, and I told her, I was like, Mom, I don't want to go back to school. And she's like, why? And I just spilled everything that happened to me at that school. And she was shocked. And after our trip, we talked about homeschooling. And I decided, well, I found a online homeschooling program called a PA Cyber, and it was the best choice I have ever made. They are so supportive, and through them I got a speech therapist who now I'm very, very, very close to. I don't take a therapy any longer, but we are still in contact. Through her, I found our time, and that was a first time I met anyone else who stuttered. I was 16, almost 17, and our time has changed my life. I now talk way too much, and my confidence and has increased drastically, and it has been life changing. And through our time, I found NSA, and like, it was all a big chain. So because I was bullied, I found many awesome things through that. If I haven't been, I wouldn't have found our time or NSA, and I would still be living in fear. And so I'm so thankful for all of like these organizations, and really I'm not upset anymore about being a bullied because I realized that because I was a bullied, I found such awesome things.
Beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho.
You know, today at the keynote speech, when David Seidler, he said that comment about growing up as a person who stutters, that you've been tempered by fire. Mm-hmm. You have been tempered by fire.
Yes, very,
my goodness,
very true. Yeah.
What I love the most about your triumph in your story is when you remove yourself from this very malicious situation at your school, it's not like you ran away and hid. You were an advocate for yourself. You found a therapist that was a good therapist for you, and then you found self-help organizations like yeah. Our Time and NSA. And I mean, I don't know you, but after that story, I feel like I do. That's really incredible.
Thank you.
First off, you're the strongest person I've ever met in my entire life.
Thank you.
Like, you're such an inspiration. It's unbelievable. You're so young and so strong. It's unreal.
That's so sweet. Thanks.
If you could give advice to someone who's maybe going through a similar situation, is there anything that you would want to tell someone?
Don't ever apologize for how you speak, because I did that a lot. I would say, oh, I'm sorry, I stutter, but there isn't a reason to apologize. You have done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And for those who have been or are now being bullied, it gets a better. If they will realize that they are being horrible people, and just talk about it with someone, because I think for me, why I was so depressed about it was because I was holding it all inside, and I think just talking about it and doing something about it really helps. I know that you aren't alone, and you aren't inadequate.
I have to say that the one word that comes to my mind when I hear this, and it's the word that comes to my mind over and over again when I'm here, when I'm thinking about stuttering, when I first got into the stuttering community, is the word resilience. Mm-hmm. And we hear the word bravery a lot, we hear the word courage a lot, but I think that resilience is like what always yes. feels, because we just have to go through what we go through. We're not choosing it, you know,
right.
not looking for this battle.
Right.
But it's coming at us. It's coming at us. And it definitely came at you.
Yeah.
And you managed to move beyond it.
I have.
But I have a question for you.
Yes.
Have you heard from the people that are from that part of your life? Have you heard from any of them?
Actually, yes. I got a friend the request on Facebook from a girl probably about a week ago, and I laughed, like, really? She was so mean to me, and I was just like, oh, I want to be friends on Facebook. No.
Yeah. She probably saw you on the news at Our Time or something, and
yeah.
she was like...
Well, like, I have friends who are still at that school, and they have told people like about Our Time, like if someone asks, hey, where is Alina? Like, they'll like explain how I'm homeschooled and how I found Our Time and that sort of thing.
But Bob, you've been a speech therapist for a long time. Have you ever heard of bullying to this degree before?
No, that's what I was going to say. This is probably the worst the worst case of bullying that I've heard. What, one thing I was kind of curious about is whatever happened to the Facebook page that was.
I actually contacted Facebook and told them that it wasn't me. I didn't explain anything else. I just said that it wasn't me, mm-hmm. and they erased it.
Okay,
you're so awesome.
Really, I think that's great.
Thank you.
Because again, I think as other people have pointed out, you know, it would have been really easy just to kind of, you know, pull back and do nothing. And I think right. that what is really the testament to you is the fact that you actually did things. I mean, you made proactive decisions that have all worked out for the best. What are your plans moving forward as far as college and things like that are concerned?
Yeah, I am attending Marymount Manhattan College next month, and I am majoring in speech pathology.
Yeah.
Yes.
One for your team.
Maybe you should come sit over here now.
Great. That's really great.
Thank you.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that can't be easy.
Thank you for having me on this show. It's really cool.
I think it will. I mean, I think for listeners, it might be struggling with similar things. Maybe not to that extent, but
yeah.
Dealing with any sort of bullying, I think hearing that they're not the only ones going through this yeah. and that you can overcome this and be as successful as you, and mm-hmm. I think it would really help a lot of people that you shared.
I want the whole world to hear it. I mean, because yeah. bullying, especially Facebook bullying, is like
yeah.
an epidemic that right. goes yeah. beyond stuttering.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a pretty...
It makes me feel ill to think, like, you're one of the nicest people I know.
Thank you.
And I can't imagine you had done anything to rub anyone the wrong way, yeah. except being yourself.
And sitting here in the same room with you, I mean, you really radiate confidence.
Right?
The fact that you've
drawn to her.
We're bowing to her now.
It's incredible. Yeah, it is.
That's the thing I was thinking too, is that, you know, you come across as being just a really cool person, and I don't know why people would let the fact that you stutter, you know, sort of mask that, and why they would see that instead of seeing the fact that you're just a really cool person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it just shows that how people just don't understand stuttering is what right. it really, yeah. really right. gets to, and that's part of the struggle that we face.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we take a quick break and come back with some more Stutter Talk, last show from the conference?
Just a quick editor's note here. The banter during the break was just fantastic, so we're going to keep that in. Also, Stutter Talk wants to thank the B Team for recording 3 simply wonderful shows from the National Stuttering Association's annual conference. And of course, thanks again to the National Stuttering Association for helping to make this all possible.
Wow, that was really cool.
That was a fabulous story.
Thank you. It's scary to talk about.
I was actually pretty impressed. I was crying when
Yeah, I was. I was you cannot cry. This is not appropriate.
Trust me, I've cried way too much of it. I'm not crying about it.
wait, when you first went to Our Time, was it something that you talked about there?
Mm-hmm. No. Each year we have a gala, and this year we honored David Sadler, and each year a student is picked for a speech, and I was picked, and that is when I told everyone about
the first time
in front of
like 800 people.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
I have no other words. I told them how I was homeschooled and why I was homeschooled, mm-hmm. but I didn't go into like all of the details of what happened.
This is David Sidler, I'm a stutterer, and this is Stutter Talk.
Yo, 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 what's up, y'all? This is Taro from Our Time, and you are listening to the hottest station in town, Stutter Talk.
This is Eugene Cooper. You are listening to Stutter Talk.
This is Leslie Codenbar, and you're listening to Stutter Talk.
Nice stuttering there. Awesome.
All right.
All right, everybody, we're back here with Stutter Talk, Joel, Roisin, Karen, and is it Alina?
Yes.
Alina Davis and Bob Kweezel. And one thing, I sent an email to Bob a couple months ago about possibly coming on to a B-Team show. Just to hear a little bit more about your story when you were growing up and presumably stuttering with some more struggle and things like that, because you're on the show all the time, kind of providing
BS. Yeah.
But I guess a lot of times people who stutter talk about a point in their life where they hit, I guess the quote is rock bottom, and I'm not sure if there was like a specific point with you, but tell us about like that, the lowest point of your life in regards to stuttering.
Okay.
It's one of those happy shows.
I'm just curious.
This show is great.
I'm just very happy.
No, this is what I always want to know,
my own
too.
Selfish curiosity.
Well, you know, but I think the thing that's important is that, you know, you don't just want to hit the lowest, yeah, the lowest point and then stop, because
I know
after the lowest point things get better. I think that's the important message, I think, is that if I think about my story, again, I didn't have nearly as many issues with my stuttering as Alina did, almost one of those moments we talked about this morning. but anyway, but you know, again, I don't think I was necessarily ever that severe of an overt stutterer.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I can recall in my life was that, you know, the speech therapy that I had in school was just not worth very much. And a couple of the stories that I tell, you know, when I was in the early elementary grades, I would get together with all the other kids in my school, or at least the kids that are around my same grade who had speech problems. We'd be working on our tic and language and all kinds of things. And so we never addressed my speech fluency at all in speech therapy.
Okay.
We'd sit around the table and, you know, say these sentences that were loaded with R's and things like that. And I was like, well, what are we doing this for? And then later, when I moved from New York to Indiana, I had an SLP who was just a really, really nice guy. But again, we never did anything that addressed my speech fluency, because I would go to therapy and I'd be fluent. So we just didn't talk, you know.
Okay.
Hey, how's it going? Just fine, you know. And so I never learned any skills, you know. You know, I never felt that my stuttering was really much of a problem. I never felt like I was really that overt, although I guess I was, because clearly somebody noticed something where they decided I needed to have speech therapy. So clearly I was doing something that somebody was noticing, but... and then as I got older, I was probably, I think it was probably my senior year of high school, I believe. I was in a class and I was answering a question, and I had a block, and for me it was a fairly serious block, and my classmates started laughing, and I thought, well, shit, you know, if my classmates are laughing, these guys who have known me for probably, in some cases, 6, 7 years, are laughing at me, and I was going to be heading off to college in a few months. It's like, what's going to happen when I go off to college? So I think at that point I became a pretty seriously covert stutterer.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start to be very imprecise in my language, you know, referring to that that thing, you know, kind of your story about where do you live, you know, well, it's, you know, and so you dance around these words, you know, and, you know that guy, what's his name, and, well, who, you know, what's his name, and you'd make the person guess, you know, it's like going through 20 questions rather than just saying what you want to say. And so my first 2 years of college were just pretty much of a waste of time. I was in a optometry curriculum at Indiana University, and I wanted to be in big classes, and I didn't want to talk. And I remember there was this one class I think it was a history class that I was supposed to take, and it was a lecture and then also small discussion groups. You know, you're supposed to meet in these smaller groups. Well, the first day of these small groups, okay, let's go around the room and introduce ourselves. And I'm Bob. And you just sit there and you go, uh-oh. And finally, I forget how I did it, but I managed to, you know, I spelled my name or what I did. And you're sitting there going, oh, my God, what an idiot, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I never went back again to that until I learned at the end of the semester they were going to give the final exam in these little discussion groups. So I go back, and the TA looks at me and says, who are you? Well, if you think back, I'm the guy that couldn't say his name back, you know, back in the beginning of the semester, and I'm going to not be able to say it to you now, you know. And so at that point, I thought this is just a joke, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I quit school. I went to work in a factory. What I refer to as my only real job was I went to work in a factory. And after doing that for about 5 or 6 months and realizing that that's not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, driving a stacker forklift, I had a friend, and this is kind of funny now that I think about it, a friend who lived in Dallas, and he was going to school at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, and so he needed a roommate for spring semester, and I needed to get out of the factory job, so I simply moved down to Dallas and kind of pondered my life that semester and thought, you know, the thing that was holding me back was my speech. Mm-hmm. So I decided when I went back home I was going to change my major to speech and hearing and also get speech therapy for myself, and that's when I got what I refer to as my good speech therapy, where we started to, you know, learn about things like, well, if you don't give yourself a chance to stutter, you say, well, I'm going to stutter if I try to do that. So you don't talk. Mm-hmm. The thing you were talking about this morning as well.
At that point in your life where you go to college for 2 years and, you know, you're not real certain about what, you know, what's going to happen with you, and then you were with your friend, and then you turn around and say, I want to go to school to be a speech pathologist. Like, what were your parents thinking at this point? Like, where do you remember? Like,
I mean, I don't think it made a huge difference to my parents.
Okay.
Like, you have to keep in mind about what the cost of college tuition was back when I was going to school.
Okay.
You know, I think, and again, I don't want to shock anybody here, but I think it was $135 a semester for tuition.
What? I wish.
And I also want to mention, I always say this to my students too, because it both shows how old I am and also shocks them, but I used to budget $50 a semester for books, and I would rarely go over that. The only semester I went over that budget was when we had to buy Travis's handbook on speech pathology one semester.
Okay.
But every other semester, I could buy all my books for less than $50.
That's ridiculous.
That's
amazing.
So I had lots of money to feed my dinosaur that I used to ride. So the whole idea of like changing majors and whatnot was really not that big of a deal back in those days, because it didn't cost as much to go to college as it does now. And I think that my parents were actually happy, because I think that I was doing something, you know, more proactive. Mm-hmm. The thing that happened too was when I came back from Dallas, I had grown my beard, which I still have now today. I think my parents thought I turned into some kind of of a hippie or something like that, you know. And so I think that the fact that I went back to school and finally getting into something that I liked. And the other thing that's kind of funny is the first time I actually talked to my parents about my stuttering was when I got into therapy. You know, they said, "Let me talk to your parents about your stuttering." It's like, well, why would I want to do that? And it's like, well, have you ever been curious about it? It's like, well, yeah, I guess so. So I actually came home one night, you know, after therapy, and I sat down and was talking to my folks about, well, what are your earliest memories of my stuttering and things like that. And so again, I at that point I learned just to be more open about stuttering. And again, you know, during those few years, I mean, I'd often say to myself, well, I just can't do that. I just know I'm going to stutter.
Yeah.
And what happened in therapy was they said, well, how do you know you're going to stutter? Well, I just know. How do you know? I just know. And that's kind of like, well, I know because four years ago I tried to say that word and I stuttered on it. It's like, well, is that the best metric of what's going to happen today? And it's like, no, but it's my metric, you know. And so they finally said, well, let's try to, you know, let's try to say some words, some things you think you're going to stutter on. Let's try it. And you'd start talking and going, oh, I can actually say those words, you know. And it's this sort of shocking moment, like, oh my God, if I actually tried to do it, I can do it, you know. So
did you ever have any other career that you were interested in doing? Like, do you think that you started to become interested in your speech pretty much, or interested in becoming a speech pathologist, but basically based on the fact that you knew you were having some difficulties, or
in fact, when I was first looking at majors, you know, sort of like what things would sort of interest me. Well, I've always had bad eyesight, so the idea of being an optometrist worked because, like,
okay,
I had often visited my optometrist. I knew what it was like to get your glasses fitted and whatnot, you know. So that one seemed like that sort of made sense. And one of the reasons why and this is kind of a funny story, I suppose, too. But one of the reasons why I didn't go into speech path right as a freshman was because when I looked in the catalog, it said you had to get a master's degree to get, and I thought, a master's degree? I can't possibly get a master's degree. as I sit here now with my PhD, but in those days, like, I could never possibly earn a master's degree. So that was something that I thought, you know, I don't really want to go into a major where I'm going to have to get a master's degree to be able to practice. And so I just decided I would go into something else, although it turned out the pre-optometry was really going to be a 6-year program too. So I was even more stupid in those days than I am now. Let's just kind of put it that way in terms of making some life decisions. But the main thing at that point when I was looking for a college major was what's going to give me the largest number of large classes and the largest number of classes in which I'm not going to have to talk, and what's a career, okay, in which I can not have to talk. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so you look for majors that are like non-speaking majors, and there really aren't a whole lot of them, actually. Yeah. So
it's funny that you mentioned it a couple times, like being aware of the size of the class, and I was also very aware of that. I went to an enormous school, and when I look back on it, I don't think it was, I mean, I went to NYU, so I was like, oh, I want to go to New York, but I think a lot of it was like, I'm going to get lost in this school. And I don't care. Like, it'll be better for me if nobody knows me.
Yeah.
I just had never, like, said that or heard that. And it's interesting because I would think the same thing.
Yeah.
And it sucks because the large classes are the ones where you don't have a really educational experience most of the time.
Yeah. And one of the classes I really hated was Spanish, because Spanish was like 20-some people.
Oh, yeah, they're
always
small.
And they would make you go around the room and talk in Spanish. And
writing classes and Spanish classes.
God, I was very pleased when they changed the requirement at IU, I think when I was about a junior, where they said instead of doing like 2 full years of spoken foreign language, you could take like a foreign culture kind of a class in lieu of that second year of of speaking, and I was like, oh, thank God.
I was allowed to take a sign language class where one of the rules in the class was you're not allowed to talk.
Bingo. Right?
Like, yes, like, that's me.
I ended up minoring in that.
And I think it is funny, you know, when you kind of look back at some of the choices that you make. And again, I think sometimes, you know, you're making choices that are based on trying to just sort of survive as a kid who stutters, or a young man who stutters, or whatever. And you look back and you kind of laugh and say, you know, God, what was I thinking at the time? But at the time, it was like, I just want to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like rational.
Yeah. I don't want to be exposed as a person who stutters. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to go through all that crap, you know, the look, the whatever, the don't you know your own name kind of stuff, you know, the laughs. And so, but then when you finally learn some techniques, if you will, and that's not a good word, but you learn some ways to manage your speech and make it less severe and be more open about it, and just, you know, you feel that less of that being stuck, less of that loss of control. It's just such a huge change, and that's why I call that my good therapy, because I didn't really learn a huge amount of, like, we weren't really focused on, like, speech strategies per se.
Yeah.
It was more like, well, what's going to happen if you try? And it's like, well, I don't know. I'm going to probably stutter. And it's like, well, let's try it out and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then I would try it, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I thought I was going to stutter, and I didn't. Or I thought I was going to stutter really, really badly. Was it you talking this morning about that like, stutter you're going to get into that's never going to stop?
Yeah, like you're going to be in it all day.
So what I refer to as the terminal stutter, right? That's the fear. Like, okay, I'm going to get that one, and it's going to kill me, okay? And so that's the one, you know, and if you know that you can manage, you're going to get stuck, yes, but there's a way out. You have some mechanism, some techniques for working through those blocks. It makes a huge difference. It really does. So it's still no fun being stuck, clearly, okay? But you don't feel that feeling of just total helplessness that you felt before you had therapy, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. As I think, as I look over the last few years and trying to work on this thing, if there's one thing that has really, really changed, it has been that idea of worrying about the showstopper. You know, like that big stutter, and like that was always the thing that was the most, like, that I felt the most crippling fear about. And yeah, you're right. Now, for the most part, I mean, now and again, I know I'm going to get in a significant long block, but I know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that concept is it's one that a lot of people experience, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. They come to see.
I think one of the things, too, that as I've met more and more people who stutter, I think that my experience is similar in the sense that a lot of times what happens is the moments where stuttering becomes an issue is where life changes. In other words, like in my case, it was like going from my senior year to college. And you start to think about, what role is my speech going to play as I make these transitions from one place to another? And I think that's what often draws us to say, well, it's time to do something. And in my case, it was actually more like 2 years after I started college. But the idea was, at some point you say, you know, I've got to do something. I can't continue to live the way I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just that notion of finally, you know, pulling the trigger on speech therapy and doing something, and that clearly was the best decision I ever made. I mean, I've been doing this now for... more than a few years. Let's put it that way. And again, I mean, I've never had any second thoughts about making this my choice for a career. Mm-hmm. And I come here, and I see many of my colleagues that I've gotten to know in this profession, people who stutter, people like Joe Klein, for example, who I know, Eric Jackson, you guys, but also people like Scott Yaris and Nan Ratner, who don't stutter, but who are my really, really good buddies as well, who I would not have known and would not have been able to hang out with and do work with if I hadn't, you know, chosen this profession. So again, you know, having people laugh at me when I was a senior in high school has led to a lot of very positive things, just like right. in your case,
yeah.
being bullied by your quote friends in
quote.
School quote right will lead to a very positive life
right.
for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I have to tell you, and I know I wrote you an email about this, but I really came to appreciate you when I read that paper you wrote about your experience in Florida, and it was one of those nights for me where I was just like thinking about stuttering a lot, and it was probably like 2 in the morning, and I was just reading through things, and then I just read this paper that you wrote about going into a professional setting and having to deal with people who, I guess, for lack of a better term, just don't understand stuttering. And I know you've told this story on the show before, but I just like wrote Bob an email and I was just like, "You're my hero."
That's awesome.
Thank you for.
Had you met, you know, at this point?
I think maybe it had been introduced to you briefly, maybe at an ASH or an NSA, but
you're my hero.
It's just like it's just people like that that you know have had to deal with this stuff, and just because of that, it becomes just a little bit easier for the next people down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my people just don't get it. Paper from ISAT.
Yep,
okay.
That one.
Yeah, we should probably link to that from this show, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
we'll
one
post
of my
it.
Bob's paper. Some people just don't get it. Is linked at stuttertalk.com, episode 287.
That's one of my I sort of similar to the thing we were just talking about a little while ago where. You deal with these things, and you sort of, there's a certain level of sort of anger that you feel when you're dealing with these things, mm-hmm. and so I sort of try to keep the angry Bob under wraps as much as possible. But every so often he kind of comes to the surface.
For
so.
Bob, angry Bob, so many sides, so many sides to Bob. Well, it's been great to have both of you out. Have you on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. It's fun.
We're so happy to have you.
Yeah.
And we actually are going to have to wrap it up soon so we can make it to the closing banquet in time.
Yay.
But thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I want to mention, too, that I really am a big fan of the B team, and it's really an honor to actually be here in your presence.
That's weird.
Now Bob is bowing to us, in case you can't see.
Thank you all very much for asking me to join you today. I really appreciate it.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
For saying
Great.
That.
Yeah. Okay, bye, guys. Last
bye.
Show,
bye.
NSA.
Bye. See you next time.
See you in Tampa.
I am Superman.